Cannonballs. We're back. I'm Gemma Kaneko.
I'm Ben Cosman.
And this is a podcast where we dive into the literary canon, but instead of diving, we jump rudely in and ruin it for everyone else in the pool. You know, like a cannonball.
Like a cannonball.
Yeah, like a cannonball. But yeah, our version is spelled with two N's and a Z. That's how it goes. Our book in this two-parter was the classic Louisa May Alcott novel Little Women, and we are joined again by our guest, Katie Boland, who has read the book 10 times.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Little Women expert, Katie Boland.
Yes, Little Women expert. I learned recently
Dubious
from my
title.
Friend. Yes, but I learned from my friend who is a lawyer that experts in patent lawsuits get paid $500 an hour.
Wow.
So when it comes up, when someone has a Little Women related patent, you can make bay. So that's, in the last episode, which you can listen to on our feed, we talked about the first part of Little Women. If you want to go back and listen to any of that, you should do that. But we are now diving in to part two. So if you haven't read part one of Little Women, you might want to do that, or you can just get spoiled, whatever. It's up to you. It's 21st century. You can do what you want. Also, we assume that pretty much everyone except for Ben has read Little Women.
You know, I've read it now. I've completed Little Women.
Yes, yes. Time to confront some of the thoughts we had.
Some disappointments.
Some disappointments.
Some hard realities in part
some
two.
Hard realities.
Confront it.
They're adults now, you know, it's 3 years later.
Yeah, they're
getting married.
They're 20 to 24.
They all
real adults now.
A lot in the book. So it opens with Meg's wedding.
Yes.
Her wedding to Mr. Brooke, who I still think is probably like 39, and who you guys think is in his late 20s. But
there's certainly an age gap there.
There's certainly an age gap. So they get married, and it's like in the backyard, and it's really nice. And everyone has feelings about time and getting older and whatever. And then Grandpa Lori sends over some nice wine, and Lori's like, where's the wine? And they're like, oh, we saved some for medicinal purposes and gave the rest away. I'm like, God, why is everyone in this family such a buzzkill? Such a literal buzzkill. It's the worst. And then Meg is like, Lori, promise me you'll never drink alcohol. And he's like, fine.
Yeah.
No.
Promise me you'll never drink alcohol.
Let him live.
How are
the Marches could use some alcohol, honestly.
They could. How am I supposed to find someone to sit in a closet with and make fun of other people dancing if I'm not also drinking?
Right.
Just so you know, Ben and I are drinking right now. If you couldn't tell.
We are drinking the Marches wine that they gave away.
Yeah.
It is quite vintage.
It's medicinal. It's for gout. I don't know.
For scarlet fever.
It's for my scarlet fever that I got at the end of the last episode. Yeah.
But yeah, the wedding is weird. They like all join hands and dance in a circle around Meg as if she's descending into heaven or ascending into heaven.
Ascending.
Descending
into hell. Sorry, I'm reading the Shaw play, which has a dream sequence about hell and like a debate with the devil, so
it's sounds whole like thing. Shaw.
Yeah.
So fine. Meg's marriage, she's out of the house and basically out of mind, honestly. She's
yeah,
like,
she
bye.
Meg, this is Meg's written off portion of the book.
Pretty much.
She comes back.
She does.
Yeah.
But then we get to, like, spend a little bit more time with Amy, who we talked about at length in the last episode, which is it turns out that Amy, despite being some people really identify with her, some
Katie.
People. Yes, Katie.
Some people in this group.
Some people.
My roommate, Danielle.
Yeah.
Some people really identify with Amy. Some people are more Joe. I always thought of myself as a Joe, but that's because I have really long dark hair and I like books. Yeah. I don't know. Like, that's really surface
level. I
mean,
Joe is the coolest.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. Joe moves to New York. We'll get to that.
She did that. She's literally,
Joe
is the cool girl.
she probably, well, you know, when we do our 21st century rewrite, because that's in now.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was. We can talk about that.
Did you read that? Well, we'll talk about
it. I did not read it, but I read about it.
So we learned some things. Amy is still Striver.
Social Striver?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a climber.
Yeah, she, like, wants to have a party with her rich friends, but it ends up being kind of awkward because none of them really know how to do anything. Like, in part one, Joe tries to cook dinner. It's a disaster. Like, Amy tries to have a picnic in part two, and it's a disaster.
Nobody comes, right?
Yeah, or, like, rains.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
She
brings lobsters on a bus or something. It's a trip.
Can you imagine being on a public bus and the person next to you just has, like, a bag of
lobsters? That episode
lobsters.
Of Broad City.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get to Connecticut.
Also, we also learned that it's embarrassing to eat lobster because apparently it was poor people food at the time.
Right, yeah,
which
that is so fascinating.
It used to be prison food because it was abundant and cheap.
Yeah,
that's truly fascinating.
They rebranded and now it's rich people food.
So. They rebranded and corn production went into overdrive.
So Amy's working. Amy's trying. So also important to remember from the last part is that when Beth had scarlet fever, Amy, who had not had it, was sent to live with their rich Aunt March. Mm-hmm. And Aunt March kind of likes Amy because Amy is really good at getting people to like her because, as also we discussed, she does things only so people will like her in different things.
Amy knows how to behave to Aunt March, in Aunt March's opinion, like a proper young lady.
Yes, you know.
Which Joe does not.
I appreciate Amy's ability to move in different social circles, unlike Joe.
I think both things are admirable. I think you're right. I think in this, in our discussions, you've kind of won me over, which is that the world is not kind to women at this time period.
No. Exactly.
And Amy's just doing her best to manipulate it into getting her to the place she wants to be. Like, does she want to get married to someone who her parents are like, oh, she'll learn to love him, whatever?
No.
No, she doesn't want that.
And she wants to travel. She's artistic.
You also, I think it's still at this point, is dead set on getting married for money, I believe.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think she was.
You know, also, again,
don't hate it.
You gotta play the game.
Don't hate it.
And if she, I do think that there is actually, I still think she's a sociopath. Do not get me wrong. Cold-blooded. But she burned Joe's book. Cold-blooded sociopath. But I do think that she, I always feel like when character, like, and I'm, I hate that I'm going to keep drawing Harry Potter references, but like how Harry's like, let me yell at everyone until I get what I want. That's not effective.
No.
You should be sneakier. Like, yeah. Like Amy.
Amy's very smart.
Yeah, she's very cunning. Smart. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
I respect Amy. I have a fearful respect of Amy. Yeah,
I feel that she was suffocating under the sort of moralistic tone of her family. She's like, you know what? This is boring.
Oh yeah,
she's trying to do something different. She's trying to break out. Everyone's like, "But Amy, yeah,
I do. I like
appreciate
Amy
that
because she also sees Marmy's shit. All the other girls buy into it. Amy's like, no, Marmy, you're not as smart as you pretend to be.
Exactly. Your life does seem kind of boring, actually.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm gonna go.
You made some mistakes along the way. I am not going to repeat your mistakes just so I can condescend to my children who don't know any better.
If this book was a little bit darker and written by, like, Wilkie Collins, or, like, oh my god, imagine if this book was written by, like, Theodore Dreiser, like, Amy would have become, like, a morally bankrupt actress who had billions of dollars and, like, had lovers on the side. Like, well, billions for the time, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and everyone would have been like, oh, $100. We hate her. She would have been amorally successful, and it would have been kind of great.
Yeah.
But that is not what happened. But before we get to Amy's fate, talk about Joe. Joe, who has always been a writer, she finally publishes.
Yeah, she's doing some stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She publishes.
She publishes, but she has to, like, sell out, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
She has to cut all the interesting stuff, stuff that she thinks is interesting, which, as we talked about in part one, is sort of a little bit of an analog to Louisa May Alcott, who really loved writing sensationalist fiction. Mm-hmm. She really liked to write crazy adventure stories, violence and drama and poison, but that was not necessarily what sold books. So Jo learns that lesson as well.
Yeah. But she publishes, she becomes a published author, she makes some money.
Yeah.
She sends Marby and Beth to, like, this ocean,
to, like, a kind of, like, seaside.
I love how people in this time period were always getting sent to the ocean for the,
like,
air,
clear their lungs. Also, now Beth, despite the fact that she recovered from scarlet fever,
she still sort of dies.
It's just sickly now. But Beth really does become the fantasy, like, how there's always a character who's genteelly dying of TB, except for she doesn't have TB, she just has, like,
death,
sainthood.
Yeah. She is just perpetually
the weakened heart.
Heart. All right, well, before Beth's still alive when Meg and John have to deal with how it's tough to be married.
John, who's Mr. Brooke. We still call him John now.
Because they're married now. But they have twins.
Right.
Which they name one-to-one after themselves, which I think is really funny. Like, their names are John and Margaret, which is the parents' names.
Daisy and Demi.
Yeah. Oh, and
I still don't see. I know, and they say it so logically. They're like, "Well, she'll be named Margaret, but called Daisy, obviously, and he'll be John and called Demi, obviously." And I'm like, "What the fuck?"
Again, it seems like Alcott had to pull out of real life because it is so specifically weird. Like,
exactly.
How do you make that out?
I actually love, though, the scene, though, where Meg's trying to be, like, the cool wife, who's like, you can have friends over whenever, and I will always be ready to entertain. And then he does do it, and she's like, how dare you do this to me? I'm not ready. How could I? Like, you know what I mean? And I appreciated that. I appreciated that. Despite their creepiness and their relationship, I'm like, you know, that is, like, a real thing in, like, any relationship where you are trying to be cool, the other person takes you at your word, and then they push it and you get mad, like, how could you not have known? And it's all about communication, and I appreciate that.
It is all about communication, but it's also about how, like, somehow it's Meg's job to deal with the fact that they're, again, genteelly poor, and he's just not supposed to get a better job or anything.
Well, then, no, but the thing is, like, she's like, I, you know, I realize that you can't do this. He's like, no, absolutely, I will never do that again, and I appreciate that.
No, I will never bring anyone home.
Well, then, like,
I won't do that.
But then he just goes out.
Then he just goes out instead. And their next problem is that he's just, never at home.
Yeah, yeah. But we just learn about how, like, tepid and boring their marriage is, essentially.
Oh, well.
Which, Meg has always been kind of tepid and boring.
It's all about running a household.
Joe was right.
Yeah, she was right. She was right. Marriage is just a shit deal.
Yeah. A trial.
Yeah.
But also, we should point out that Lori comes up with Daisy and Demi, and so they just let Lori name their kids. Like, oh, yeah. Great names. Lori, we knew you would do it.
Daisy and Demi.
It's so weird. It's like, is Demi, like, because he's, like, half of John?
I think, actually, that is, right? Because it's, like, the second, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, maybe that.
Brightening.
Yeah, because Lori says, name him Demi John and call him Demi for
sure. Oh, yeah, Demi John.
Demi John.
Half John.
That's so funny.
Wait, but they really did name him Demi John, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my god, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, that must
that
have been
a
naming convention of Reconstruction era.
Very strange.
Yeah.
Are we now in Reconstruction? Was the war over?
Yeah, but they're not, because they're in the North, so
they're in the North, so they're not getting.
But so the war is over?
The war is over.
Okay.
The war is over.
So she doesn't even have to pretend to mention it.
Yeah. Now it's like, oh, remember when I was in the war, and everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
So they get married. I wonder what Demi John would name his kid.
Trey.
Quattro John.
Quattro John. Quattro. Guy, I think that's what it is. Quattro John. All right. So you really liked the chapter Calls.
Yes.
Which is the visiting
Calls.
Chapter. Yeah.
Calls is great because Calls seems like a standalone where Joe and Amy just. So Amy brings Joe on these calls, which
And I actually like that because I think it's a very sweet, I actually thought it was cute because it's like they clearly are, you know, they may butt heads, but they clearly have a lot in common and they're good friends. You know, they were having a good time, despite
it
all.
They also only basically have each other now because Beth is like in this ethereal.
Yeah, she's barely hanging on. Yeah.
Like, I'm so close to death constantly, so they can't hang out.
But yeah, they had a sweet energy between them in that chapter, and I appreciated that.
Yeah,
I love it because Joe is basically just going around to all these rich people's houses, goofing on them the whole time.
She's so rude. Like,
but yeah, and they. But I think at this point, they've reached a point in their relationship where Amy's like, "Okay, well, that's Joe, and that's okay, and I'm not going to fight it anymore. But I'm going to do what I want to do, and I appreciate that. Like, they reached a point where Amy's like, "I'm going to let her do what she needs to do, but like, this is my thing."
Yeah, they let Joe be Joe and Amy be Amy, and it's great.
They accept each other.
Sweet. It's the funniest chapter,
it's
I think.
Definitely the funniest chapter. Joe just acting like such a doofus in front of her is great because she has reached the point where she doesn't care.
Right.
Yeah. She's like, I'm always going to be crotchety. I'm always going to be weird. This is just how I am. Like, I don't care. I don't care about any of these people.
There's also, you know, the class war comes back a little bit where Joe's like, why do you care about these rich people? Just because they're rich, we don't have to care about them. They're dumb. Let's make fun of them. And Amy's like, yeah, they're dumb, but, you know, you don't have to make fun of them to their faces, Joe.
I know, yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, it's like, yes, we all get it, but god damn it, like, pull it together.
But we should talk about, because the end of this chapter, there are real consequences.
Yes.
Literally, because the next chapter is called Consequences.
Exactly.
Joe.
And, again, this is where my Amy love comes in.
Yeah.
Because the last rich people they visit is Aunt March.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe is kind of mean to Aunt March, or she's pretty callous or cavalier.
And she was expecting the whole time that she would get to go.
Right.
To Europe. So Aunt March is going to go to Europe.
Yeah. And she was like, well, I'm her companion, so I'm going.
Yeah. And because Meg is married, Joe is now the eldest, so.
Yeah.
Amy is not.
Next
Whatever.
In line.
Yeah.
But Amy is so charming and you know, she really jives with Aunt March where the next chapter is Consequences, where Aunt March is basically like, sorry Joe, I'm bringing Amy to Europe.
Which kind of makes
Absolutely.
Sense because you don't really want your rude niece to make fun of people, presumably making fun of their accents to their faces.
Making fun of people Europe. Across Europe.
Yeah. Which is like, so more stories, not from my life, but from my friend's life. She was talking to this guy in a bar one time, and he's from New Zealand. And she was like, do you ever find that people mimic your accent to you? And he was like, well, actually, you're doing it right now.
Oh,
like,
my
she didn't
God.
Even know that she was subconsciously speaking in a fake New Zealand accent to him. And I was like, this is what would happen to Joe. She would go there, and someone would be like, ah, mademoiselle, un verre de champagne. She'd be like, oh, champagne, the snares. I'm smoking a cigarette and colonizing Algeria.
Absolutely.
And they'd be like, oh, my God, get out of France. That's what would happen.
That is absolutely what happened.
Yes.
Whereas Amy actually studied and can speak passable French and get through it.
She can't spell it, though.
No,
she can't spell.
Yeah, her pronunciation was good.
But I would totally want to read the Joe chapter of Joe and Joe.
This was a different writer, and if it was just farce, yeah, I'd be really into that.
So again,
it would be funny.
Defense of Amy. She knew what she wanted. She played her cards. She gets to go to Europe. Joe doesn't get to go.
I'm just getting way more on Team Amy the more we talk, which is weird. I spent a lot of time in my life identifying with Joe.
Yeah, well, you're meant to identify with Joe for sure. But
I want Amy. I mean, good for Amy. She's getting what she wants.
I don't begrudge Amy anything. I'm just still terrified of her.
I mean, you should be. She is definitely like in a different show. Like she's Claire in House of Cards. You know, like she's.
Oh, I love Claire.
Yeah,
we all do.
She's definitely the one who gets what she wants.
Yeah, she does.
Yes. So she goes to Europe. And she has a minor love affair with one of the, like, annoying, loud, the cheater, the croquet cheater.
Right.
From part one.
Yeah, Fred
Vaughn, who also sounds like a tool. His name
sounds like he, I feel like he would be like Prince Harry. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Just kind of like a roguish party.
Yeah. Well, Ned Moffat marries Meg's friend, Sally.
Right.
But so she goes and she has like a minor love affair and she's like, if he proposes, I guess I'll say yes because he's rich, whatever. Right?
Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, that's essentially what, well, not because Mr. Brooke was rich, but she basically said because he's here. So yeah. The Marches do not have the highest standards.
Well, I guess Amy marrying for comfort for the rest of her life is what she's always wanted,
true.
Right?
True. She
and he's English. Like, I guess that's a thing.
That's true. She would live in England.
Well, she could maybe convince him to move to Rome, which was she's always wanted to do.
Right.
Sure. So if he proposes, then she's going to say yes. But then his sickly brother, who it seems like... His twin. If you get injured or have one disease ever, you're just fucked. Because, like, it seems like he got paralyzed.
Well, there are no antibiotics.
Or something. Yeah, like, whatever happened to his legs happened because he was, like, riding horses aggressively. And then he get the horse falls on him or like falls over a stile or something. Anyway,
okay, actually though, if a horse falls on you, like you that could kill you.
Well, but he lives, but he has a cane. Like it's not like he can't walk, he just has a cane because of the horse injury in the first part.
He's not a cyclops like Laura.
but now that apparently has translated into ill health for the rest of his life.
Yeah, he's a...
Fred gets noticed that Frank, his twin, is sick, so he has to leave. And he's like, I'll be back. So he leaves. He's obviously a fuckboy because he is totally ghosting her.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So that happens. So at the same time that this is all going on... Lori is into Joe, and Joe kind of knows it, but she's like, oh no, I don't.
Yeah, they don't
weird.
Fuck.
They do not bang.
I am devastated. Joe spurns him. She says, no, sorry. I mean, literally, Lori gets friend zoned.
Well,
Joe is within her rights. I'm not saying
anything. Joe wants Lori to marry Beth.
Right, because she thinks Beth is in love with him, right?
I think,
and she thinks that's why she's being sickly, because she's heart sick?
Okay, so I think it becomes clear that, well, like, Joe probably doesn't even like men. Fine.
Yeah,
that's
another thing. But Joe wants to be Lori's sister.
Yeah.
Their friendship is so close that she thinks of him as family. And Beth is also basically asexual. So she's like,
why not?
She's the porcelain figurine.
Put the two dolls together.
And marriage makes you really uncomfortable. So maybe it's like Beth and Lori can get married and I don't have to think about it in a sexual sense at all. Because that's weird. And like, that's not going to happen. So it's like, we're all just going to be brothers and sisters forever. Like, I really do think that's how she thinks about it.
Yeah, they just want to make Lori a March.
Yeah.
I think Lori wants to be a March.
Yeah.
Which we see later.
Yes. Great moment.
Yes. I feel for Joe because I really don't think she cares about men or being married at all. And I think everything about that happens later is just bullshit for the book sales. But
yes.
As someone who did identify with Joe, I was like, oh, Lori's so great. It's still traumatizing to me to this day that they did not even kiss.
They should have banged at least once, just, you know, to get it out of their systems.
That's the fanfic.
Lori took it pretty hard.
He did. So he proposes to her.
He literally flees to Europe.
He proposes to her. She says no. And he fucks off to Europe.
Yeah. It's so dramatic. Like, everything. It's like they're staying at people's houses for weeks at a time. They get upset and they literally go to Europe.
Yeah. And, like, Joe goes to New York. She's right. like, oh, Lori's in love with me. Before he proposes, she's like, oh, no. So then she goes to New York, and she starts writing for a magazine that's called, like, the Fiction Volcano. Right. I can't remember. Yeah. Volcano is in the name of it. And it's sure, like, creative output is so volcanic. And she meets an old German professor named Frederick
She's
Beyer.
In a boarding house, right?
Yeah, in a boarding house. And she meets him. And
and they just keep insisting on how ugly he is.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, so, so very hairy.
And like 40.
He's
and
so very
young,
40 years old.
Again, Alcott clearly did not have much respect for the Germans.
Yeah.
And I know.
And he convinces her, like, she like overhears him giving some bullshit sermon about how sensationalist fiction is bad.
Like poisoning the minds of children.
Yeah.
Oh my
and
God.
She's like, oh no, I'm making all this money and have my independent career in New York, but I should not do it because of what this dude said, and I hate that.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is also the opposite of what Louisa May Alcott did in her own life. She did not give up her writing career because someone was like, this kind of shit is not what people want to read. She was like, fine, I'll just make a bunch of money and then keep writing whatever I want in my spare time. She did.
Yeah.
But Joe does not. Joe kind of gives up on writing her sensationalist fiction. She goes home. Lori proposes her, as we know. She says no. He goes to Europe and he tries to like write an operetta with
yeah,
Joe as the heroine.
I love that. It's such a heartbroken move. Like, I'm going to write an opera.
I'm going to write a
it's
breakup
be
song
incredible.
About you, essentially.
I'm writing my novel now.
I'm writing a breakup opera.
I will say this is my least favorite part of the book because it suffers from Arrested Development Season 4 syndrome, where now all of the characters who the best parts of the book are when the characters are together and, you know,
uh-huh.
riffing off each other. And now they're all separated.
Yeah.
Meg is you know, chained to her husband. Beth is lying in the realm of the dead. Joe is in New York and back. And Amy and Lawrence are off in Europe. And it's just, you know, I want them all to hang out.
And there's, like, another time here when, like, he sees her at some party and they're hanging out. And she's also, like, drinking champagne and wearing pretty clothes and, like, hanging out. And he's like, oh, I don't like all this.
You're talking about Lori and Amy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he again does the thing where he's like, she's putting on airs, blah, blah, blah. She's living her life, Lori. Amy's living her life. She finally gets to be in Europe and like have fun and like get a fancy fan or whatever. And you have to be like, why are you pulling all these tricks to look pretty? And then she explains them all. And then he's like, you did it for me? Oh, it's about me again? Now I'm in love with you.
Right. Yeah, he's a fuckboy.
I still think he's a nice guy, not a fuckboy.
Wait, she doesn't. She says, "I did this for you," or is she just like explaining, like, you don't understand what goes into this. Here's
more like you don't explain what goes into it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's also like in the narrative, it's kind of like, oh, I know Lori's gonna be there.
She's sort of
and he's handsome. She does sort of
neg him later.
Well, they have this moment where they both see each other in a different light. Like, I mean, I get it. It's well, we'll talk about what happens next. But they see each other across a party, and he's like, oh, she's not the little girl I once knew. She's like, oh, he's not the lanky teen I once knew. Look at this man.
He's really into my sister, yeah. whose manuscript I burned, and who I still probably kind of hate. So
it's a little creepy because Lori literally has a moment where he's like, ooh, Amy is all grown up now.
Amy's looking good.
Oh.
Everyone is such a creep. Oh, God.
Yeah.
What a creepy century to be alive.
But, you know, the pickled limes were worth it.
I hope she ate all the pickled limes she could afford on Aunt March's dime.
Yeah, yeah. She was
I really hope she was. So they, you know, this all happens. They're in Europe. We annoyingly leave Europe to talk more garbage about Meg and John, Mr. Brooke, and about how he now goes to, like, hang out with his friends after work because she's so tired from being a housewife and taking care of the kids that she's, like, not making their home sufficiently welcoming garbage.
They have two demon children.
Yeah, apparently. Who have never heard another human being speak English.
For their father being a tutor, he's not doing a too good
job. No, because he's obviously just leaving it to the kids. And at the end, the revelation is like, oh, wow, maybe he should stay and help raise his damn kids.
Yeah, this is deadbeat dad chat.
It's so weird. It's like, this relationship I really can't get
But also,
behind.
Marmee, again, blames Meg, where she's like, oh, if you made, you know, if you were more of a welcoming wife, your husband wouldn't go running off with his friends all the time. God damn it, Marmee.
Why are you like this, Marmee? You're teaching them to internalize misogyny every second.
Yeah, which is why, I'm going to bring up, I recently watched the 1994 Little Women adaptation
with
Winona Ryder
as
Joe, Susan Sarandon as Marmee. A Claire Danes who does an impeccable cry face as Beth.
Oh my God.
And a very young Kirsten Dunst as young Amy.
Oh,
she's really great. Amy and then the older Amy is pointless. It's so sad.
But they really give Marmee some credit in the movie. Susan Sarandon is this very sort of ahead of her time, almost, you know, ahead of her time feminist character.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, but I did not see that in this
This
book.
Is not, no.
Yeah, they really gave her a lot of credit in that movie.
Oh, my God. My favorite moment, though, in that movie, though, is Mr. Brooke, when Laurie's like, what do you think the girls do over there all day? And he goes, across, or...
The veil.
The mystery is a female life. There is a veil drawn, which is best remained undisturbed.
Like death.
Yeah, like Beth is death.
I was just, oh my God, that was the funniest line. And then just like shut, they just like cut to the next scene. It's like, whoa.
And then it's just like, oh yeah, you're right.
It's across the mysteries of female life.
I mean, obviously Alcott was appealing to popular morals, yeah. Which is that women should behave a certain way, and it is always upon women. So then no one could accuse her of writing something that was somehow corrupting people. It's like, oh no, yeah. This is like teaching your young women how to like live.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. But, you know who doesn't live?
Beth. Finally, Beth dies.
Beth finally dies of...
I don't think it's ever explained. It's just Joe comes back from New York, and she's like, oh, Beth has the death glow. She's yeah. dying.
Yeah, she's dying, and she's always dying. She's been dying ever since, like,
she's been dying for five years.
Yeah.
And she just dies of being too pure for the world, right. Honestly.
She literally, Joe just sees Beth, and then Joe goes to Marmee and's like, Marmee, Beth dying. Like, she just knows.
Yeah, and there's and everyone's kind of like, I guess we're all gonna accept this.
Yeah, I mean, it was a for the buildup at the end of part one where Beth was on the verge of dying, her actual death was kind of anticlimactic to me.
So I read this when I was a kid, and all my life I always thought that Beth died in part one. Like, I always thought she died.
You thought she was dead.
I really did. I always thought that like, in my memory of it, because I think until we did this for this podcast, I hadn't read it since I was probably, like, 9.
Yeah.
And that entire time, for, like, the past 10 years of my life, I have definitely assumed that she died of scarlet fever.
Yeah.
Like, I never remember that she lived into the second part of the book until I read it this time.
We only vaguely check in with her every couple of chapters. Yeah. Like, oh, and Beth was by the window again.
She's not, and I think it's because it's like, what am I supposed to do with someone who's, and I think maybe she did wish that she'd kill her off of scarlet fever. Because she's like, I actually have nothing for this character to do.
Yeah. Oh,
well, she dies. But she
thank
dies.
Thank God Beth is dead now.
She dies of her sainthood, and it's great.
Yeah, but they decide, the Marches decide not to tell Amy in Europe, which, I mean, I guess fair, but still, I would be super pissed if I was Amy and I come home. It's like, surprise, your sister's dead.
And we didn't invite you to any part of it.
but
that's fine, because I guess nothing overshadows the glow of Amy's happiness, because Laurie proposes to her.
Yeah. Yes. As they're rowing boats, and he goes, like, don't you want to row with me together? And she
forever?
Says, yeah.
Well, no, but before, though, he offends her, because he starts trying to hit on her, and she's like, I know what you're doing, Laurie. He's like, what? Like, I always knew I should be part of the March family. And like, I would want to be loved for myself and not for my family.
Not because Joe said no to you. And it is, we should all be clear, it is a rebound.
Oh, 100%.
Relationship.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, he literally flees to Europe because Joe rebuffed him.
Yeah.
And then there he just, you know, settles for Amy, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, like,
but they make sense in that society way. You know, they're both cultured. They're both whatever.
Yeah, and like, and Joe is actually pretty happy because, again, other than the shoehorned garbage brother. At the end, she just wants Laurie to be her brother because she doesn't like men.
Doesn't like
yeah.
Which is fine for her, and she deserved that life. But, so they get married, and they come home married, and they're like, oh, we got married without you because we wanted to be able to come back together.
Right.
Because
some visa
everyone's like, fine.
Because it was immoral for them to travel on the same ship at the same time.
Oh,
Like, they didn't have to be in the same room. Like, they could have come back at the same time on different, like, in different
classic
parts
steamboat
of
marriages.
This is so weird. That doesn't make any sense to me. But they come home married, and then the German professor is like, obviously makes up a reason to be in Joe's town. And because he's like been thinking about her forever,
right?
And he shows up to like shoot a shot, I guess.
Yeah, he's like, "Hey, Joe, remember me?
Remember how I'm old
how
and
I
totally don't
dreams?
Deserve you? And I told you that your writing was trash. like, do you want to get married?"
But all the Marches buy it. They're all like, "Oh, this genteel German guy."
Laurie's kind of like, "Oh, he wants to marry Joe. That's
weird."
Oh
yeah, Laurie does not like him because Laurie
is in love with Joe.
Still in love. Will forever be in love with Joe.
Yes. Yes. Also, I understand that Joe had to marry this dude because of selling books.
Yeah.
But this is garbage.
Yeah,
this is more garbage really than weird. Anything else that happens in this entire book series. More garbage than her not getting together with Laurie is the fact that she marries this old German man.
Obvious that Alcott can write a slow burn because she wrote it with Joe and Laurie, but she did not do that for anyone else.
Right, it was literally for this one. It's just, well, Joe has to be married, so
he's capable of it, but she chose not to
bring back the last man she spoke to.
Yeah,
who was that guy? Bring him back.
But in the middle of this, we get the terrible Daisy and Demi chapter.
Oh, so boring. It's so boring.
We don't have to talk about it. Just the chapter completely dedicated to Meg's children, which...
You know how I started thinking about this? It's that these books are basically the popular entertainment of their time. So it's TV. And you know how after a long time of watching a show, kind of the later seasons are just super fan service-y?
Yeah.
Like Game of Thrones right now, like the last season of Game of Thrones. It's just like, everyone wants this, so let's have it happen. That's kind of what this is. And sometimes, instead of being super fan service-y, they pull, like... cute kid is here now, like Oliver on the Brady Bunch when Cindy got too old. It's like, that's what is happening now. These annoying kids are here and they do their weird baby talk that sounds exactly like how Hannah talks. Bizarre. Anyway,
there's that whole thing. Boring chapter. Alcott's clearly just writing some filler.
Yeah, it's total filler. Get paid by the word kind of thing.
Yes.
Honestly, they really did get paid by the word though.
Should we talk about the end?
Let's talk about the end.
So
yeah,
Joe and Bear get married.
Yeah.
They inherit Aunt March's estate.
Plumfield. Yeah.
And Joe opens a school for boys.
And there's a sequel called Joe's Boys.
Yeah. I think there's a few sequels.
Two sequels, says Danielle, our producer and roommate.
I've actually never read the sequels.
And Little Men.
Little Men and Joe's Boys. But I want to talk about the last chapter, the last few pages, because it is, for a book that is so moralistic and sort of trying to sell you on the hope of life, it is the bleakest thing I've ever read. Where it is literally, they're standing around, all the little women and Marmee are standing around, and they're just talking about how all their castles in the sky, their dreams from the first part one, did not come true.
No, none
of how their lives are nothing like they wanted them to be.
You know what's infuriating is that Joe's dream obviously could have come true, but instead she married an old German man.
Right. Like, there's no reason.
She was publishing. She's getting paid and writing her crazy books.
She's a successful author. And then she settled for
an old German man, which is horrible.
That is so bleak to me, that ending. I was just like, wow, Alcott really soured on everything.
Maybe she was just like...
I'm trying to remember now, what were their castles in the sky? Like, what was Meg's?
Oh, well, Meg got what she wanted.
Aunt domestic bliss, yeah, I guess. She did, but I mean, is her marriage blissful? I don't know.
Her marriage
seems
like a lot of work and her kids are terrible.
Mr. Brooke kind of seems like a deadbeat. I'm not a big fan of him.
That was the castle in the sky for her. Joe wanted to be a famous author. Amy wanted to be a famous artist.
Right.
Beth wanted to be
Beth
a recluse.
Wanted to live, maybe?
So, I don't think she cared. I think ultimately Beth is the only one who got what she wanted because she wanted to be a recluse in the sky, and she's technically in heaven in this book's universe, so I guess she won.
Beth got the sweet release of death. That was Beth's castle in the sky.
It's true.
But other than that, they're all talking about... I mean, I think even Laurie had dreams of being a famous...
A composer,
musician, right?
Yeah.
And he didn't get that.
He's just like a rich married dude.
Right. Yeah, what do Amy and Laurie even do? They just hang out.
Talk about rich people shit.
I will respect them. There's a chapter where Amy and Laurie basically said, we're not going to die rich and have our children inherit our money. We're going to give it all away. And I was like, you know, kudos. Laurie has like a real screed against the estate tax. And it's like, or pro estate tax. Like, rich people, you do not deserve to pass on your money. Like, give it to the people who deserve it. All right, Lori.
That's the most I've liked
you. And Amy agrees with him, which surprised me. But...
Right. Well, she wants everything for herself. She's not doing things so other people can benefit.
She's
going to
spend all of her money, even her children, you know, no.
Yeah, she's not like, I didn't do all this work for other people to benefit from it, okay? She's an adult now. That copy of Pilgrim's Progress is like, she probably burned it because she likes to burn books. That's gone. Like, she doesn't have to worry about it. So that's how it ends. Like, that's the end of the book.
Yeah, the end of the book. I'm just talking about how dreams are a sham.
How did you feel?
I liked it. I really liked this book. I came around, I think, once they started being a little more dickish to each other. The beginning was a little rough. I still think, you know, Marmee is full of shit. And I'm glad Beth is dead, but...
identify as Beth.
Beth is dead. You said Beth. You were a Beth.
I'm not gonna... You know, next question.
Ben, waiting for the sweet release of death. Okay.
Yeah, you know, aren't we all?
That's the message of Little Women.
But it's fun. They have fun. You know, there's some laughs. We cried. We laughed. It was good.
I'm glad I read it again.
I definitely think the sweet spot of that book, though, is right when they were, like, all hanging out, like, all doing stuff together, all their hijinks.
Yeah.
That was part one, the sweetest part.
Yeah, the middle of part one is really good.
Part one is definitely the most fun. It's all the hijinks and childhood memories that I think are really touching about it. So, sure. Yes.
I could see really loving this as a young person.
Yes.
Having a lot of nostalgia for it.
Hey, if you want to tell us if you're an Amy or a Beth or a Meg, God forbid, you can tweet at us at CannonballsPod on Twitter. That's Cannon, C-A-N-O-N, balls with a Z, pod on Twitter. And then you can play along with this next game. At the end of every show, we do the dice roll of doom, or death in this case, because everyone's, you know, scarlet fever. So we're going to play a game. We're going to play a game determined by the roll of the die. Our games are... These are some of the games we could get. Wow, this got racist. Who dies? Who's gonna bang? We probably won't get those because that's part one business. But a would you rather game, pitch the gritty reboot, pitch your fanfic, and who goes Nazi? Which is about who would become a Nazi in this book. Which
now
characters?
We're getting closer.
We are getting closer.
Would any of them? No, probably none of them would survive that long.
No.
I mean, I guess
Daisy
like,
and Demi.
Daisy and Demi could.
They're probably gonna go Nazi.
I mean,
if you're named Demi John, you're probably gonna be.
You're gonna have a chip on your shoulder, that's for sure. All right, Ben, you wanna roll the die?
Let's roll the die.
All right,
six.
We got
describe
six.
Describe your fanfic.
Oh, we all know.
Fun! Wow, we all get to describe our fanfic. We can build one together if we need to. We can all have our own version.
Which character are we following?
I'm gonna look for it because I'm sure it exists. I'm just gonna look for this. The sex fanfic for Joe and Lori.
There is totally one.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. It's out there.
Lori fanfic. There's probably Joe, coming out fanfic.
Sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Sure
getting
is,
with
yeah.
Sally Moffat, maybe? I don't know.
She's married now to Ned Moffat. Wow. That's probably
like an hour situation.
Oh, wow. Wow. Is that yours? Is that the one you would write?
I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
Which character do you want to follow?
I want to follow Amy and Lori.
Really?
Yes, I would like to know more about what happens with them because it's such a weird. Yeah, their marriage is built on such a weird premise that I'd like to know what else happens.
It's going
to
get rocky, probably.
Yeah.
I bet Lori becomes some sort of train tycoon or something.
He does get really like morose and has fits of anxiety sometimes. Yeah. And she's tempestuous too, so.
Oh, that's interesting.
I can totally see Lori cheating on Amy.
Yeah, probably.
I mean,
cheating on each other. I can see them having an open marriage.
I'm gonna write my super pro polyfic about them having a really dope open marriage.
Yeah, yeah,
maybe. That's what it's gonna
be. In the late 1800s? I don't know, but
well,
yeah,
you know
maybe.
What? Everyone,
why
it's
not?
A fanfic.
Right,
it's not
like
it needs
some, like,
to
commune
hue
or
extremely
oh, I'm sure that went
reality
on.
Yeah.
And time, you know, it's all good.
I was just reading, for whatever reason, I was needed to know the plot of Albert Nobbs. And I was reading about that, so it stuff happened.
It's gonna, that's what I, yeah, maybe that's gonna be mine. They're cool of a marriage. Or maybe, like I said, I'm gonna rewrite the entire book from Hannah's point of view.
Yes, that's,
oh my God.
It's gonna be
that's the gritty reboot where she chops them up and puts them in the
walls. Word, like, rewrite. You know, because people do that fanfic. They're like, let me just rewrite an entire novel.
Isn't that like Grendel?
Yeah, except for much worse. Mine would be much worse than Grendel. Just to be clear, no one would buy this book and have to read it for their freshman year philosophy class. Okay? Be 1,000 times worse. It would be called Hannah's Story. Little Hannah's.
Hannah's Story.
Hannah's Women.
Hannah's Women.
Yeah.
Hannah's Wages.
Right.
Hannah's Back Wages that she never got.
There was, I think the woman's name was Donna Jo Napoli. She wrote Hansel and Gretel from the point of view of the witch, and it was like oh my God, that book was terrifying. That was a legitimately good, like, young adult fiction book that was, like, legitimately scary. I reread it in college, and it was still
I'm gonna read that.
Insane. That it was called The Magic Circle, and the whole idea was that this woman was, like, an actual, like, you know, sorceress who was, like, blessed with gifts, and, like, in her community she was revered, but then she joined with the devil accidentally, and then she was cast out.
Huh.
And that's what happened.
Sounds
too crazy.
Early.
Yeah.
And she eats kids. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's like it's a whole thing. You gotta read it. It's fascinating.
Gotta eat. Yeah. I like that. We've read Little Women. We've done it. We'll check one off the list.
So much, you know, my favorite part about this book is there's so much to make fanfic about.
It's true.
It felt like an experience reading this book, which is really good.
And now we all, or at least me, are going to start Googling right after this is over.
Open that Word doc. Start typing.
Go down some wormholes.
That was Little Women. I'm really glad we read it. It was a
great
lot of fun. Great first book. It's October now. So we're going to start getting spooky. For our next couple of books are going to be a little bit spooky. The book we're going to read next one episode is Henry James's The Turn of the Screw, which I've somehow never read and neither has Ben.
I've never read.
Interesting. Then after that, we will read Dracula, classic, in time for Halloween, and it will be extremely creepy. I last read Dracula when I was in sixth grade and a precocious little jerk.
I think I read it right around then.
Oh, great. We are both precocious.
I've never read either of those. Wow.
You can read along with us. Anyone can read along with us.
Yeah, my mom told me to read it because she's like, oh, kids like vampires now. Mom, this is not the kind of book.
Like, you started reading Octavia Butler's vampire novel, Blood Bond.
Interesting.
Super weird. It's a very, like, freak. Like, Octavia Butler was clearly a freak. It's all about, like, polyamory, literally.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that's what Turn of the Screw is about. I don't know that.
Well, you can join us for Spooky Week, and we will, Spooky 3 weeks, in fact, and we will see you then.